bringing you unique perspectives from inside the world of addiction and mental health recovery. This is Recovery Unscripted.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Recovery Unscripted. I'm David Kondos, and this podcast is powered by Foundation's Recovery Network. Today, I'm joined by Tom Garofola, Chief Marketing Officer of Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. He sat down with me at the Moments of Change conference in Florida to share his own remarkable journey, from playing in the rock and roll scene of 1970s New York, to training as an addiction counselor in a penitentiary, to now leading a team of marketing reps for Retreat. He also examines how the culture within the treatment industry has allowed unethical practices to take root, and how the ethical people in this field can rise up and bring treatment back to its core purpose, helping people in need. Now, here's Tom. I'm here with Tom Garofola. Thank you for being with us today, Tom.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Good to have you here. To start things off, could you tell us a bit about your personal story and why you got started serving in the world of addiction recovery?
So I started in this business in 1993. Obviously had some of my own personal experience with addiction, as well as I lost a brother to drinking and driving. He had suffered from addiction. I was intent on changing my life. I wanted my kids to be proud of me. I remember when I was finishing treatment, I was like, what am I going to do? My mother used to call me a jack of all trades, master of none. I figured the one thing that I didn't know enough about, I think, at least at that time, was drug and alcohol. So an opportunity came to go back to school and to begin a career in trying to help people. And this career that I have had now for almost 25 years, it's really been good to me. I have the ability to try to help people. And each and every day, I do that. I remember where I came from. And in today's world, you know, I have kids that played baseball that I coached in Little League that have already died. So I have more work to do.
Yeah, man. And so you mentioned that you have your own personal history with recovery. And when we were talking earlier, you said you even came up in New York playing with Joan Jett and the Ramones. And like, that's a crazy story, man.
Well, yeah. People tell me someday I should write a book, and I don't want to make this all about me. But I do think I have some kind of a story. I've been with people in the Bowery, New York, if people remember what the Bowery was back in the 70s and 80s. And I've been involved in politics over the past, I'm not now, but for about 8 years. And I was in the company of some very powerful men like Al Gore and Joe Lieberman and Ed Rendell.
What were you doing in that capacity?
I was involved locally in New Jersey, and I ran a couple of campaigns for some local people. And back in the 70s, before basically is where I started my own personal story. I lived just outside of New York across the Hudson River, and I spent a lot of time in New York, and then we had a band, and I played with people, hung out with people who had made it, at least professionally. Some of them are gone and were gone before me, but I mean, I had my moment. I'm reduced at this point to an occasional karaoke or an open mic, but I still try to carry a tune. I'm not sure how well I do.
So coming out of addiction into your new life in recovery, you were kind of deciding on what could you do with yourself now. So how did you get connected kind of in this industry and then eventually with the retreat?
When I went to treatment, I went to what's an old therapeutic community. It was either there or a state-sponsored vacation, as I call it. And towards the end of my time there, I had heard about a program that the federal government was offering. In New Jersey was one of the places. If you were approved, you would go back to school for two college courses, which would give you 6 college credits, as well as your entry-level certification for a counselor in New Jersey. And I worked where I finished, at Integrity House in New Jersey. I started off there. And then a good friend of mine who worked there took a position, a high-level position, with a company called Spectrum Health out of St. Louis. They had the contract in New Jersey for the Department of Corrections. So I went back as a counselor there. And that was kind of fun because when those gates closed behind me every day to go to work, I worried about who might make a mistake and think I was supposed to stay.
Yeah, man, that's an interesting environment, I'm sure.
It was definitely interesting. So, I mean, my master's degree, my thesis was done on the high rate of recidivism amongst adult male substance abusers in the criminal justice system. So I worked in that environment for several years. And then I worked for a company that does detox in hospitals around the country. The current owner, the person who founded Retreat, Peter Shaw, was in the middle of another project in southeast Pennsylvania. I joined him, and we've been together since. And so I've been with the Retreat since its inception, and I think that there's no perfect program, but I do think that we do it as well as anybody. It really fits how I feel ethically about this business and what people do. And so I'm proud to be part of Retreat. I'm chief marketing officer, and I've had a lot of wonderful opportunities to meet a lot of good people. As far as I'm concerned, I have as good a team as there is in the business.
You touched on you have some clinical background as well.
Yes.
Could you tell us more about how that kind of has helped inform you now that you're chief marketing officer doing the marketing side? Like, how has that helped your vision, your perspective with the marketing?
So, you know, half of my team also has clinical background. And in today's environment where there are so many shady and unethical things that go on at different so-called treatment programs, the clinical knowledge that I have and that some of our staff has allowed us to be able to really vet who we're going to work with. In this industry, people are looking for referrals. Marketing, that's what it is. Look around you here. Everybody wants the next referral. Well, so do we, but I'm not taking referrals from people that think I'm sending back and they're not doing what they're supposed to do. Unfortunately, in today's environment, we don't get enough time with people who need help. Now, when I started in this business, there was no such thing as a continuum of care. At least that catchphrase wasn't there. That only began when managed care started to get involved and people's private insurances started to go from 9 months of treatment to 6 months to three to what we have now. And so the people at ASAM at that time decided they needed to figure out how to deal with that. And so they came up with the continuum of care. So it allows me as a clinician with a clinical background, I don't want to say I'm a clinician now, there's a lot that I'm not up on, but I stay up on it enough, and then I have staff that's what they do. It allows me to know who I'm working with.
Yeah, and so you mentioned earlier the idea of ethics, and you know that's a big thing that a lot of people are talking about right now is the unethical practices that are going on in this industry. So I guess let's start this part of the conversation by asking why do you think it is that this field, addiction treatment, seems so prone to this unethical behavior?
Money. It's a simple. It's money. The last number I saw, there was a 45 to 48% return on investment. That's why you have companies that have nothing to do with addiction that are opening places, especially Florida model programs. And the Florida model, when it was first created, it was created with all good intentions. It would lengthen people's stays. It would be a cheaper cost. But when things like Obamacare, when kids were allowed to be carried till they were 26, when that kicked in, a lot of people that know how to make money looked at it and started doing the things that we're seeing. And there's nothing wrong with making money, but you can make money in this business and do it right. We have everything in this business now. I mean, there's a steakhouse, not that good chain steakhouse, that owns a place on the western coast of Florida. That's the simple answer as to why. Look, there are people out there with headhunters, predators, call them whatever you want, but they're all they're about is money. And so that's the reason why it's like that. And people are trying to make money, and they'll do it any way they have to, some people. It's a shame. But you have, literally, we have a generation your age that's dying, and it's sad to me. It's really sad.
What what are some other examples, like some unethical practices that you've seen, or just kind of examples that show the general culture of these things, like being accepted? Because it's kind of like they're accepted until somebody comes out and says, you know, this isn't how we do it.
Listen, I know enough of what goes on in the industry, in the back rooms, you know, smoke-filled rooms, if you will. You have people that drop off envelopes to certain places for their referrals. You have people that call themselves marketers that are literally getting paid per head. I'm not sure if it's still this way, but a year ago, if you could get an Aetna PPO, goes out of network, they were getting paid $3,000 to $5,000 per head. It's crazy. It doesn't lend itself to quality care or being concerned about the type of care somebody's going to get. There are some people that know who they are, or know those people or those places that work like that. We stay away from it. There's no reason to do that. You can help people. You can, again, you do what you have to do. You can make some money if that's the biggest issue for people. We all want to make money. We want to survive. We want to take care of our families better. There's nothing wrong with that. But you can do it right.
Yeah. And it just kind of seems like it's that culture of treating these people in need as kind of a throwaway population is the term. And so it's just kind of like you're trading in a commodity more than you're, you know, helping this person get to, you know, where they want to be.
And sadly, that's what this population is viewed as, a throwaway population. They did it to themselves. That's what the stigma is all about. That stigma, I think, is continuously perpetrated almost indirectly from some people in our field who have been doing this a long time and feel like there's only one way to do it. Medication-assisted treatment right now is this hot topic, right? Why is it okay for somebody who's got 30 years clean time, it should be their way that this person gets it? It's a different world today. These kids are dying at a rate that's staggering. The drugs out there is... They're a lot stronger.
Powerful, yeah.
They're much more powerful. It's the perfect storm. The drugs are more powerful. You have less time to treat them. You need to get it. People that have been clean a long time and got it through AA or NA need to open their eyes a little bit and need to broaden their mind. What worked for you doesn't necessarily work for somebody else. Whatever gets somebody on the road to recovery, even if it's medication for some period of time, or if it's what they need forever, as long as if they're not shooting dope, they're not doing pills or doing something that's going to kill them, why is that bad? And again, that's for me. I mean, my preference is that you get clean and sober and you don't use anything, but I'm not living your life. Narrow-minded thinking is part of what keeps the stigma going, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And so for people who are in this industry, they want to do things the right way, they want to kind of take up this cause and help change things, what are some things you recommend to them for how they can do that, even just in their own business or their own community?
Look for people that care about what they're doing, about care about helping people. You don't have to be in recovery to provide treatment. You don't have to be in recovery to be a good therapist or to be a good marketing rep to help people get treatment. You just need to have a moral conscience. You need to want to do it right. You know, up in the New York area, there used to be a store called Sims. The owner, Cy Sims, his motto on TV's commercials would say, "At Sims, an educated customer is our best consumer." I think it's the same thing, whether it's parents looking for treatment for their kids or people opening businesses and looking for the right people to work for them in this industry. An educated consumer is the best.
Another part of this ethics discussion deals with insurance. What are some of the ways that you're seeing people take advantage of loopholes or insurance in some way, and how do you see that becoming better?
You have places that literally will buy somebody their insurance. Now, that would be nice if that was from an altruistic bone in that company's body, but that's really not what it's about. You know, they'll lay out $1,500 for the insurance, and then it's obviously unethical, whether it's criminal or illegal. I'm not 100% sure, but it should be. So that's one way. On the flip side, the insurances are helping to kill kids. You know, what we've tried to do is work with the insurances. If you can't beat them, join them, right? So, you know, you now have insurances that are looking for best practices so that you want to get in their network on their preferred providers list. You have to show that you have best practices. And so that's what we're trying to do. But you have insurances that, you know, you have somebody that's been through treatment 6 times. If they give them detox and out, sometimes they're lucky. They won't even approve the detox. If you suffered from diabetes or you suffered from cancer, if you relapse 4 times, is an insurance company going to tell you, okay, you can't get any more help? Like, it's a
double standard.
Standard is just really, it's really sad. And again, it goes into all of these different factors that are helping the addiction problem get worse, not better.
Yeah. And so now, looking at a bigger picture view, what are some things we can do as an industry to kind of fight that culture and also fight that general kind of lack of trust that people are starting to feel about addiction treatment?
So in my humble opinion, there are a few things that you can do, right? The reason why the insurance companies are so powerful is because they spend a lot of money on lobbyists. It's very hard to get those people in Congress that are benefiting from the lobbyist work to go against the insurances. So the insurances are capitalizing on that. We have a few organizations in this business, like NADAC, that offer advocacy. There needs to be more. There literally needs to be more of that. So I think that that's one way. I think if you know places are unethical or doing things like that, I think that you should out them. And I come from the streets in New York City. I'm not much on snitching, if you will. I'll snitch all day long. Let me know. Let me know who you are.
So just like outing them to your peers? Or?
You can out them to your peers. Obviously, everybody's litigious, right? Everybody's going to sue you. So, but there are now, especially in Florida, you have people that you can out them to, that you can get people, that you can get the authorities to look at what's being done by one place or another. I think that needs to happen also. I think the places that are doing treatment the way it's supposed to be done, meaning the client or the patient is top priority, I think they all need to bond together. I don't look at everybody here as competitors. There's so much business, unfortunately, for everybody. We should work together to make it a clean industry, to make it something that everybody can be proud of, to make it so that when a family sends their 20-year-old to treatment, they can have the confidence that their kid is going to get care. He's going to be given the tools so that they can begin a life of recovery if they choose to use the tools.
And like you said, so much of this business is done on referrals. If you're a company who really wants to take a stand for this, you have a lot of power when you decide who you work with, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you see commercials, companies that generate referrals, okay? Most of those places that are doing is lead generators. They don't really care what's being done in the business. The same way some places that do just detox or short-term residential, when they send to the next level of care, they'll send to anybody if they're getting business back. That's really not the measuring stick. It shouldn't be. The way we look at it is we don't get enough time with people. You know, 26 days, 30 days, 17 days, it's not a lot of time. You want to refer to somebody you know is going to pick up the ball from there at that next level of care. I think those are the things that we need to do. I think there's a lot of work to be done, and there are a lot of talented people and ethically sound people, people with big hearts, people who've been through the addiction process themselves or just want to help those people. Those people need to bond together. They need to come closer. In my role now, I mean, I don't do direct marketing anymore. I have a big staff, a very talented staff, but I do spend a lot of time interacting, developing relationships that I think can help people. And sure, do I want them in our beds if they fit and they're appropriate? Yeah, but I don't care where. If we can put them in treatment. There are a lot more people that don't have insurance that need help than there are those that have insurance. And I see a lot of them in New Jersey. Having been around a long time, I get a lot of calls for that. And we try to do the best we can in either helping them ourselves or finding the appropriate place. It's important.
Yeah, not to leave anyone hanging. It's just like, okay, well, that's not going to benefit me so much, so can't do it.
No matter what.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap up with this final question. You've devoted a lot of your life to this mission over the past like 25 years plus, right?
Yeah.
So to close up, could you kind of sum up why helping people find recovery is so important to you?
I think God has kept me around for a reason. I had many opportunities where he could have said, you know what, it's time to come home or go somewhere. It's all I know. Lives matter. People matter. Their lives matter. People deserve a chance to get better if they want it. For me, again, I look at things almost personal. I watch kids that I coach, taught them how to throw a ball.
Yeah.
So for whatever time I have left in this business, it's important to me, and I'm going to give it everything I have. That's just who I am. I think people who know me know that.
Yeah. Well, man, thank you for your time today and for the great work you're doing. It's been a pleasure, and I can tell that, yeah, that this is a passion of yours, and it really comes through. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks again to Tom for joining us. Now I get to welcome Will Hart from the Life Challenge team. He joins us each month to give us an update from their community, which is the aftercare support network for those who have gone through Foundations treatment programs and anyone else up for accepting the challenge of living life in recovery. Last month's challenge was to get into the spirit of fall by carving a pumpkin, and now Will's back to share the new challenge for this month. Welcome, Will.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing all right, man. Good to see you again.
Good to see you too.
All right, so what have we got for this month?
With the holiday season here and Thanksgiving right on the way, we figured make a list of things that you're thankful for would be a great challenge for this month.
Excellent. Again, getting into the spirit of this month's season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. So then what do they do with that?
What we kind of thought is, you know, make a list. For me, it would be my friends, my job, my dog. Just take some time, say thank you to those people that might make your list. Just take some time to think about it, reflect on it, and if you'd like, we'd love to see some of your stuff you're thankful for. Share it with us. Share it with others you're around, you know? Try to get the whole idea going out there.
Yeah, man, yeah. And again, a good reminder, you know, once you make the list, a reminder for yourself to kind of like, oh, you know, I really am thankful for my family or my friends or my dog or whatever. And, you know, just a reminder for you to pour yourself into that.
Mm-hmm. I think some people will be surprised what they come up with.
And yeah, as always, they can share it on your website, lcaccepted.com.
Yep, the Bragging Rights page is probably the best spot. If you want to send us a picture of your list, send us a picture of you and write a little description of what you're thankful for. We're always happy to hear from you.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks again.
Thank you.
This has been the Recovery Unscripted podcast. Today we've heard from Tom Garofola of Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. To learn more about his work, visit RetreatAddictionCenters.com. And thank you for listening today. If you like what you hear, please leave us a rating on your podcast app. We'd love to hear what you think. See you next time.